It is week 23 of the year 2021, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Finally, I'm finally back with another episode of Father Roderick to the Max. As I've explained in the other two episodes that were posted this week, I've had quite a few issues to deal with on various levels of my life. I've got my work life, lots of very strenuous deadlines to deal with for the final episodes of my TV show. Then I had some health issues, most recently also the side effects of the vaccination, which you can hear more about in The Walk, and just the overall kind of temporary provisionary situation that I'm in while my house is still being renovated. There are so many things that I have to deal with behind the scenes. And sometimes I'm just out of energy, out of time, out of even focus to record podcasts. And, well, unfortunately, you suffer the consequences of that. But I finally got my act together on at least a few of these levels. So I'm glad to bring you my my usual show as a thank you, as you know, for your support, for your monthly support. Thanks to all of you that have just joined the community of patrons. I'm really, or patrons, I should say. So glad that you are now part of the family. I hope you've also figured out how to use Discord. I see more and more new names and familiar friends popping up on Discord. It is a vibrant, very kind, supportive community. And it is one of the best additions lately to the community and to the life around the shows. As I've already explained in the other two episodes as well, but in case you listen to this one first, I was working on a three-part series about my Camino to Santiago using iPhone 6 footage that I had recorded when I first walked that road to Santiago from Lourdes, already 4 years ago. Just today, I saw one of the final photos popping up in my Facebook memories feed where it shows you, you know, this day, so many years ago, you posted this. And it was a photo of me walking across the beach towards Finisterra, or Fisterra, which is a coastal town that is often the final destination for pilgrims that don't want it to end in Santiago itself. And that was absolutely my situation back then. So I'm very happy with the end result. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people in the Netherlands. And this is one of those productions that I can't wait to fully translate and bring to you in English as well, mostly because I had to cut away so much stuff for the Dutch version because of the time constraints. I only have 25 minutes, three or four of which are already meant for other elements of the show. So you're left with about 21 minutes for each episode, and that's not much. So I had to take out a lot of stuff. Plus, it is made for a very general audience, so I couldn't really go too much in depth. I try to keep it as personal as possible, but there are some things that I feel more comfortable with sharing with an international audience than with this general Dutch audience of TV viewers that I don't know as well as I know my international community. So there is definitely lots of material for an international adaptation, and I can't wait to start working on that. In addition to the new season, the new TV season, the last TV season that I have to make for Dutch TV, that is going to fill most of my summertime, so I won't be able to take it as easy as I wanted to. But then again, I'm still waiting for the renovations to finish, so what else am I going to do with my time, right? So let's move into the health section.
Just look at the x-rays! You see that dark spot there? Whiplash!
Whiplash? Oh no!
And this smudge here, that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma!
I already shared at length the issues that rose from getting my vaccination. I've been basically sick for 2.5 days. Even yesterday, when I recorded the walk in the morning, I was feeling quite all right. But then in the afternoon, I still got a relapse. I still had to lay down a little bit. But in addition to those health issues, I've got something new on my plate, something that has never bothered me before, and it's hay fever. Now, a lot of you are suffering from hay fever, especially during this time of the year when the grass pollens and the tree pollens are everywhere. What complicates it here in the Netherlands is that we've had a very cold springtime. And if you listen to The Walk, you've heard me complain about how cold it was for months. Well, the effect of those low temperatures has been that everything in nature has also been on hold. And now that we're finally getting summer temperatures, all of a sudden, nature is catching up and all the flowers and trees are now releasing their pollen. And from what I've read in the news, even people that normally don't suffer from hay fever or pollen allergies can still now have symptoms of hay fever patients. Well, that is definitely the case when it comes to my situation. Yesterday I've been sniffling and sneezing, and I wanted to get some anti-allergy pills, but they were sold out. So it's a sign that, you know, a lot of people are suffering from those symptoms. So this morning, very early, as soon as the store was open, I went there and got, you know, they restocked. So I took my first pill. I can only take one per day. And it's improving a little bit. It's not completely gone, but it's definitely more workable than yesterday. And from what I've heard, it takes a while for your body to kind of build up a certain resistance. So I hope that in a few days from now, I'll be able to breathe without any problems. Especially this past night was very tough. It was warm. I live in a loft, so it's in the winter it's cold, and in the summertime it gets really hot up here. But I couldn't open my window because next door is a huge building that is filled with students, and they have a balcony, or it's like an open space on the first floor, and they love to organize parties there. So 2-3 times a week, like 20 or 30 people will gather there in a very small space. So I can, when I look from the window in the attic has a few windows, so I can look upon their gathering. No social distancing whatsoever. So as if COVID doesn't exist, doesn't pose a threat. And these kids cannot be vaccinated yet because they're way too young. So thinking, oh my goodness, have I ever been this stupid as a student? Maybe I was stupid, but not to this point. But then what's worse, they were playing loud music. Most of them were drunk. So they were yelling and screaming. And so I couldn't open the window. So it got even warmer. And because I was still so congested, and you can still hear it if you listen to my voice, it's a little bit hoarse. It's like I feel like everything is a little bit closed up. Well, when it's warm inside, it was so tough. I couldn't sleep at all. I tried to use earplugs, but even though earplugs take out the higher frequencies, you can still hear and feel the bass frequencies. And so when I don't know, I've never liked music that younger people tend to like. So especially the mindless, like, electronic music is like, so you lay down in your on your pillow, and then the pillow itself is like, and then the rhythm changes all the time. So if it was like a steady rhythm that would be the same, then maybe that could count as white noise. But it was like, oh, so I was like turning around, and then I still have my arm is still hurting from the vaccination, so it still feels like someone punched me in the shoulder. So I couldn't really turn around on one side because it would hurt too much, and then I lay on my back. But because I've been in bed for 2 days, My back is also hurting, and I was thirsty and warm and feeling miserable. So around 1:30, I finally get out of bed. I'm thinking, you know what? I tried listening to podcasts. I tried watching TikTok videos, tried reading, tried just checking social media, anything to just this kind of get my mind off. And in addition to that, there was also something else that was in my mind. Right that same day, not long before I went to sleep, I got two offers of companies that are needed with the renovation. So you've got the floors, all the floors in the house have to be redone. There was this old, very old carpet in one of the rooms, and then mostly it is, it's a kind of rubber floor that was there that dates back to the 50s, to when the house was built. It was never cleaned. It was never renewed. All that has to go. And then on the ground level, it's all these very ugly tiles, also very much the cheap thing to do in the 50s, and it doesn't look nice at all. So, and the staircase has to be redone. So I had a company give me an estimate, and man, it was so expensive. I mean, it's probably normal, but in addition to everything else that I need to pay for, I think the floors alone was like $5,500. And I pay all that out of my savings. But then in addition to that, I got another quote for repairs and partial renewal of the heating elements. That was more than $6,500. I'm adding all that up, in addition to everything else, and no end in sight. I was freaking out. I was like, man, how am I going to pay for all this? And I was blaming myself. I should have made a plan. But then I'm telling myself, but you didn't know all these defects that would come to light. At first, I was just thinking of a new coat of paint. You know, I was still recruiting people via social media. Let's do this together a couple of days. And I was like, man, it's almost as if we're completely rebuilding the entire rectory. And so all that, and especially when you're half asleep, you know, you're not very rational anymore. So I was kind of turning around and worrying about stuff, and it was hot, and it was the students. So even though that same day in the morning, I was still talking about reframing and looking at the positive side of things, oh man, I so failed at that. So at 1:30, I just get up. I was like, I'm just going to go walk down the stairs, go to the kitchen, drink something, maybe eat something. I was just fed up with everything. So fed up. I was like, I want my own home. I want to be gone. What am I doing here? Please get me off this planet. And then I still had my earplugs in. So what I did not notice was that Luigi, the Italian student who also lives here in the house, was also awake. Apparently he called after me because he too couldn't sleep from all the noise outside. But because I had earplugs in, I didn't hear him. So I walked down the stairs. I walk up and then he's standing there looking out of one of the attic windows at the students, calling on a phone call. And then he hangs up and he says, I just called the police. I'm so fed up with this. And I'm like, whoa. Okay. That's probably something that I should have done like an hour and a half ago. But that Luigi calls the police on fellow students, it means I'm not just a grumpy old man. No, this was objectively not cool. And then a few minutes later already, the police knocked on their door, and then all of a sudden they turned down the music and they started to very loudly, because they were all drunk, like, shh, we shouldn't talk anymore because got police down. Shh, shh. I tried to not speak loudly. And that went on for another hour and a half. And then they were going to clean the balcony. And it was all like bottles on the floor. And so, oh man, I I don't think I slept more than 3 hours last night. Ay. So I hope that tonight there won't be a party. If there is, I'm just gonna call up Elon Musk or whatever, you know, Jeff Bezos. Do you have a spare place in one of your rockets? I want to go to outer space. I don't want to be here anymore. Oh boy. So just to let you know that even though often I preach that we should stay positive and reframe your situation and look at the bright side, and in reality, it's a lot harder to put into practice. I learned something from Luigi, and I wanted to pass it on to you because it is a combination that I would never think of myself. So I've challenged the guys here to maybe bring some variation to the stuff that they are cooking. Oftentimes we eat, especially during the weekend, we always eat the same stuff. This is mostly, I think, due to Father Henry being a man of traditions, and that also extends to the kitchen. So on Saturday evening, the recipe or the menu is almost always the same and has been for more than 10 years. It is fries, and not just any fries. It's a particular brand of fries. It's the same thing. Mayonnaise, of course, it goes with the fries, at least here. And then beef. Just a big chunk of beef that is put in a pan, and then it's cooked all the way through. Yeah. And then a salad, where it's just the blandest type of salad. I sound very ungrateful. But I'm just after two weeks of that menu, I was like, okay, so I've been there, done that. Let's change it up. But no, it's always the same salad. It is just a regular lettuce. It has no taste whatsoever. Then you add mayonnaise, you add honey, olive oil, more honey. I think some, what else did they put in there? Maybe some raisins or something like that. It is just the weirdest combination. And there's just so much sauce on the lettuce that it is, it completely misses the mark on the level of healthiness, because it is maybe the most calorie-rich salad that you can make. But anyway, that's what they're used to. It's tradition. It's something that they really, really want to keep doing. So on other days, I always challenge, especially Luigi, who likes to cook, let's do something else. Why not, instead of pasta, why not do a risotto? And it's like, oh, can we do that? I was like, yeah, let's just make a risotto. So the other day, we bought risotto rice, and he tried a few recipes, and I loved it. I was like, wow, we should do this more often. It's really good. He also made gnocchi, which is made out of, I think, potatoes. And you turn them into these curly shell-like things and you cook them briefly. Those, I never really was a big fan of gnocchi because, well, it's just basically potato starch. So it doesn't have much. It depends on the sauce, but I prefer pasta. But gnocchi, probably a little bit healthier. But then the risotto, that is really good and creamy. And, well, of course, Luigi, being raised by his mom and by his nonna, his grandmother, he knows how to cook a risotto to perfection. But a combination that he made the other day, which was really too good to not give it to you, not hand it over, pass it on, I should say, is risotto with apple. So apple and cheese. What you do is you make a regular risotto using just stock. I think he used vegetable stock. I normally use chicken stock. It adds a little bit more flavor even. And then towards the end, you cut up an apple. It can be any apple. But the more tart it is, the more it will contrast with the creaminess of the risotto and the saltiness of the risotto. You cut it into very thin slices, so about half an inch in size. And you mix that in. You cook it for maybe a minute or so. The best, don't put it in at the start, because then it will become all mushy and it will lose its taste. And then you also add Parmesan cheese or whatever cheese works for you. Now, that combination of the best cheese, of course, to put in a risotto is the pecorino, so sheep's cheese. But that is pretty expensive. But you can use another salty cheese. But that it's that surprising combination of apple, and which is a little bit sweet, and then that nice salty creaminess of the risotto. And what the secret ingredient is, a splash of alcohol. It can be white wine, can be even something stronger. I think the other day Luigi was using Genever. I'm not even sure what that is. It's very alcoholic. It's like vodka, the Dutch equivalent of vodka. Let me see if that even exists in countries besides the Netherlands. So it is Genever. Sounds like Jennifer. Oh, interesting. It's gin. I did not know that. But gin is also gin in Dutch. Anyway, it's a clear alcoholic spirit distilled from grain. Yeah, that's it, from grain. I never knew that. That was the same thing. I'm not a fan at all. I prefer whiskey. It has much more taste than gin. Maybe gin is from Geneva. Juniper? Firewater? That's an equivalent. Interesting. Anyway, but a little bit of alcohol, most of it will evaporate on the spot, but that also gives it this little, what am I tasting here? What else am I tasting? But it's just that little splash that adds depth to the experience. It is really, really good. So try it out next time you're cooking and you're in for a risotto. Try to use apple and cheese. Section where I share with you what I've learned on social media. Most of the time it is on TikTok. During these sleepless nights and when I am in bed and I'm feeling feverish, TikTok is my savior because I'm too tired to read. For some reason, listening to my podcast doesn't really work that well because my Google Home doesn't really like me that much anymore lately. I don't know if it's an update or anything, but it constantly misinterprets what I say. And I have a Google Home next to my bed so I can listen to radio, for instance. It doesn't react to TuneIn anymore. I think that's a bug, as I've seen other people complain about it. But Google being Google, they don't care at all. They don't fix it. They don't respond to feedback. It is such a weird company. They do amazing things, but they're equally, it's almost an ADHD type of company. Like they can completely forget about stuff that they launched just a year ago, and then they just drop it, and it's so silly. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Apple and how Apple does things later on in this podcast, but So TikTok, what I like about TikTok is all very, very short. It's like a minute, 30 seconds, sometimes 2 minutes. But it is perfect for a very short attention span when it's warm like that. And there's a huge variety. There's always something new to discover. And every time I browse TikTok, I find new content providers and new inspiration. I love what I do, and I think I've explained this before, I do subscribe to a lot of TikTokers, and I like videos because it does make a difference with the algorithm. And I don't think it's the same with YouTube or Facebook. Not as good as TikTok, which is also kind of the scary part. But anyway, getting a lot of cool stuff. The only thing that is hard for me is to save what I discover. You can't really make a like a list of bookmarks with TikTok videos. Probably that list would be 1,000 items long in the span of a week. So maybe that's why they don't do that. But so the only alternative for me is to subscribe to that person so I can always go back into their archives and find that one video that I liked. And then you can also share that video with yourself, but I'm not going to share it on social media because it's not necessarily something that fits the other content that I post on social media. And I don't want to spam my followers with just random discoveries on TikTok. But I like to use it here on the show to share it with you. So there is a possibility to share that with OneNote, which is my go-to service that I use for most of my show notes and even preparations for my TV shows and stuff. But it's not very good. It seems to have trouble saving the link. Sometimes it only uploads part of the text, and it's always a hassle. But anyway, I was able to save a few interesting TikTok videos, one of which I want to play now. A category of TikTokers that I'm following is therapists and psychologists. Not the self-proclaimed, self-help type of people, but professionals that are giving you advice on and help me understand myself. And in the introduction, I talked about how sometimes you can reframe a situation, and the way you talk about the world around you and about yourself will actually impact your experience. And it can also help you to achieve the things that you voice, that you tend to put in the forefront of your mind. there is very, very strong psychological evidence that is the way that we're just wired. So I found this video, and I thought it was an interesting thing. Let me see. Oh, that's a problem. It auto-mutes. Let me re-click on that and see if it plays. Should play. No, why does it start muted? That is the weirdest thing. Okay, so I have to unmute it and then press play. Now it plays over the speakers. Dude, sometimes. One more time. Reload. Good Lord. Here we go.
Always looking for evidence to confirm what you have told it.
So my brain is always looking for evidence to confirm what you have told it.
So if the story in your mind is things are always shit and never working out for me,
sorry
your
for the
brain
language.
Is going to cherry pick everything in your life that reinforces that. This is why when people start to say things like, show me how it gets better, I know it can get better than this. It starts to, because your brain is going to start looking for evidence for that to be true. It's a confirmation bias, and it doesn't have to be rooted in negativity. Your brain will start to cherry pick the things that are good and that show that life has the capacity to be better. Your mind is...
Okay, and then it starts again, like TikTok always is in a loop. So before you know it, they're like, didn't you just say that? Oh, wait a minute, I'm just watching a loop. But what I thought was interesting about this particular post was that it talks about confirmation bias, and we're all very familiar with that. It is that we tend to select information that suits our preconceived ideas, which is problematic, I would say, especially if you want to approach things rationally. The fact that we want to see what we want to believe is sometimes hampering a true understanding of the world around us. Let's say if you truly want the aliens to be visiting us, you tend to look for confirmation. You will read stories that will say, you see, I was right. Whereas someone who has a different type of confirmation bias, that's the kind of classic Scully-Mulder opposition or contrast. One is always looking for a rational explanation, and that may close her mind towards other options. And the other one is always looking for the extraterrestrial esoteric explanation, which will close his mind for, you know, just a rational, natural explanation. You see that also now with the whole discussion about UFOs. There's definitely something out there that is beyond beyond doubt. There's way too much evidence. But what it is depends very much on how, you know, what you want it to be. So a lot of people are like, you see, the fact that they say that we can't rule out that it's extraterrestrial, we can't confirm it, we can't rule it out. You see, they're withholding information. It's probably because it is alien. And that's a type of confirmation bias that they will come with all sorts of anecdotal evidence that there was this one case, this and that, and it's like, okay, yeah, but did you really do the research? Did you read up on it? That's why I kind of keep myself sane by listening to Skeptoid, which is a podcast that has a very, you know, rational approach to everything and is very critical towards everything that sounds too good to be true, including, by the way, also religious topics. So miracles or certain stories, it tends to always look at things from a very secular point of view. And that's okay with me, because that's the principle of skepticism. It's, you know, you always try to find an explanation within the boundaries of what we already know about, and look at things from a scientific point of view. If there's no proof, then, well, you can't exclude it, but you need to have proof, objective proof for something to be true. And sometimes, because of our confirmation bias and that we're not aware of, we tend to maybe be a little bit too credulous. You see that also with the whole discussion about vaccination. On my other show, my public show, I talked about that at length, and I kind of hesitated. Should I do that? Because I know that some of my followers are in... it's a small percentage, but they're very, very skeptical when it comes to the reliability of the vaccinations, and they look at that whole situation from a different point of view. At least it's a point of view that I don't share. But I always like to find what binds us, what unites us. But in this case, I wanted to talk about vaccination because I feel that this should be part of is it true or is it not true? Can you prove scientifically that vaccines are going to make us magnetic? That's the newest thing. You see all these videos of people gluing forks and spoons to their arms where they have been vaccinated. I would say, well, obviously that is total hogwash. that is so easy to disprove. Just use talc powder and put that on people's arms and then see how magnetic they still are. It's a very, very old trick. But people fall for it because they want to believe that vaccines are dangerous. And if you've been telling all your friends and family and warning them against all these evil conspiracy theories, it's difficult to look at things from an objective perspective and be open to, well, maybe proof that it isn't. And it's, as I explained also on the regular show, it's the algorithms play a very dangerous role in that by limiting our view literally of, we only get to see what confirms our bias. I wouldn't want that. That's why I keep following on Twitter a number of people that I completely disagree with, that have a view of life and religion that is totally the opposite of what I believe. But I feel it's important that I listen to their point of view. It's important that I ask myself questions all the time, that I don't fall for the easy, you know, oh, well, it's just what I believe and I'm not going to search anymore. That is the opposite of what the church has always done. Even theologians like Thomas Aquinas, they were so curious. They wanted to think. No question was ever censored. He had his whole method of education was, ask me anything. He did that centuries before Reddit came up with it. Ask me anything. That was his approach. Students would ask him the most outrageous questions, and he would deconstruct it. And he would also try to find arguments to strengthen the opinion of his students. And then he would add other arguments that would disprove their point of view and hopefully be stronger. And then he would have a conclusion. You know, if I weigh everything, then I think this is the answer. That is, I think, a fantastic example of how we should deal with information and how we can prevent ourselves to become the victims of confirmation bias. What I liked about this video on TikTok is that you could also use that confirmation bias that is just ingrained in how we are wired or how our brains work in a positive way. In a sense that if you tell yourself to focus on what's positive, your brain will start to work for you and will actually start to siphon out the stuff that is negative. Now, does that make you a dreamer? Someone who's not a realist? The bishop who ordained me, the late Cardinal Simonis, he would always say, I'm not a pessimist, I'm a realist. And he would continue to paint a very pessimistic picture of the future of faith in Europe. And, you know, he probably was right. Things have gone downhill for years. He has never witnessed himself, while he was alive, a renewal of the church. And so, was he a realist? Probably. Was it productive? Did it help the situation? Did it encourage us as young priests? Not at all. It was totally counterproductive, that attitude. The same thing is currently also playing in a number of dioceses in my country where there is this policy of let's close churches as much as we can and focus all the religious life in a few places. that is, of course, it's a sensible thing to do, especially if people are in debt. You don't want people to spend money that they don't have. But that's just good governance. But that you can also go too far. If that becomes your only mantra for years and years and years, like we're shrinking, we're going to close churches, people, we need to regroup, we need to stop doing what we're doing, it's too expensive. If you keep saying that and you never reinforce the positive signs, the hopes, the ideals, the dreams even, then I'm pretty sure that nothing good will come from that. So I always think of the Rainbow Song by Kermit. It's a song about dreamers, of what's beyond the rainbow. And it is those dreams that connect us and that can have because of their the attraction that we feel towards those dreams, it can move us, it can propel us forward, it can also help us to become more creative to reach that dream. And so dreaming itself, as long as you stay responsible with, you know, not spending beyond your means, but dreaming in itself is not a bad thing. Au contraire, I would say it is something vital. If God hadn't dreamed, if God wouldn't have ambitions, you know, why even create the world? But God is infinitely ambitious in a good way. I mean, he wants the world to be. He wants every single person to grow and to love and to be happy and to fully bloom. God has a dream for every single one of us, even the sheep that are most lost. He still dreams that one day they will be back in the flock and that they will thrive. That is, I think, the source of all dreams. It's God himself. And if we're anything like God, and we are, because we've been created according to his image, we should be dreamers too. And the dreams, having those dreams, will make us creative so that we can reach those dreams. If we had never dreamt of walking on the moon, we wouldn't have been there. If we would never have dreamt up the fictional world of Star Trek, about people walking around with these slabs of metal and glass on which they could conjure up so much interesting information and useful information, if they wouldn't have thought of scanners, medical scanners, a lot of the stuff that we're taking for granted now, iPads and medical technology, wouldn't have existed. First came the dream, and then the creativity of our brains, and then the dream became a reality. And I think this applies to your personal life. It also applies to the life of your parish, of your church. If you only emphasize that, that is why I don't like that very hypercritical attitude in both in church circles nowadays. That's the kind of people that I do unfollow. People that are constantly criticizing other people, hating on the church for not being the way they want the church to be. And there's nothing positive to counterbalance it. Those people are toxic for themselves, for me, and for the church. So I don't want them in my feed, because that's the opposite also happens. It can reinforce your already, your worries, your fears. And if you have too many of those complainers in your day-to-day communications, it will start to influence your own view of life. So keep things balanced around you. Dare to dream. Also be realistic when it comes to sometimes the road you have to take to make dreams a reality. But don't stop dreaming. If you stop dreaming, it's the end of everything.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
Sometimes I have nothing to share when it comes to superheroes, but man, there's so much going on right now. Of course, maybe something that most of us are looking forward to is the new Loki series on Disney Plus. This is premiering on Friday. I'm recording this on Wednesday. And it's going to be the third Marvel series already. It's unbelievable how many of those series they're pushing out. So it's WandaVision, which unfortunately will not be renewed. We just had confirmation. There won't be a second season. And then The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which will probably get another season. And then there's Loki. And from the looks of it, Loki will be something special. Something, again, very innovative. Funny, quirky. People like the character of Loki for a reason, and I think it's very smart that they took his storyline that was kind of unresolved in the Marvel Cinematic Universe up until this moment. We know that he escaped to another timeline, another reality, a parallel universe, or whatever it is with the Tesseract. So I bet you that is going to give them a new ways to continue with him, and at the same time they don't trivialize his death. That is very important. They create a separate timeline, just as they did with Star Trek. Now, I have a little bit more faith when it comes to Loki than I had with the divergent timeline in Star Trek. I think ultimately they're going to bring that back to one timeline. It just felt contrived. I see what they did, but I prefer what they do now with Star Trek. It's just try to stay in the timeline that all of us are familiar with. Also because the other timeline, the J.J. Abrams timeline, is so expensive. You need to hire all these big box office actors that are overpaid anyway, and directors, and then you're not even sure that it's going to be a box office success. So, yeah, I think they'll probably stay on TV with Star Trek for the time being. At least from a business point of view, that seems the more logical thing to do. But Loki, I have more confidence because parallel timelines or parallel universes and divergent timelines is very, very common in the comic book world. It's kind of it's always part of the menu somewhere. There have been so many reboots, reimaginations of origin stories. This is already a staple ingredient of the Marvel Universe, and so I think that will work fine also with this new timeline for Loki. Plus, It's just a delicious concept. The guy is so evil and so likable at the same time. I think it's going to be a big hit. This may be the series that I'm looking forward to the most, much more than WandaVision, because I didn't know what to expect from WandaVision, but definitely more than The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But I won't go into that. Let's wait and see what they bring us with Loki. Another thing when it comes to superheroes was, of course, the opening of the Marvel section of Disneyland, which at first I didn't really know what to think of it. They showed us some pictures while they were building it, and it all looked so bland. And, well, it's just basically because the Marvel universe is not that different from ours. It's all happening in our culture, in our time. And what makes it different is you have these superheroes. So from a visual point of view, the Marvel section of Disneyland looked like something you could do without. Like, why? It's just looks like just modern architecture, nothing too recognizable. It's also because when you think of Marvel, you don't think of locations. When I think of Lord of the Rings, I think of New Zealand immediately. When I think of Star Wars, I think of so many different planets, and they're all different from the world in which I live. If I think of Marvel, I just think of people in spandex. I think of superheroes, but I just really don't immediately have an... Well, maybe Stark Tower. That's the only thing that comes to mind. That is quite recognizable, but that's something that they didn't build in Disneyland. So I didn't know if it would work. However, now that I've seen some videos of first visitors that went to visit that part, I think what they did is quite clever. They have I'm not sure how to say that, but one attraction is super eye-catching. It kind of sells the whole concept, and that's the Spider-Man stunt show that they do outside. And I don't know if you've probably seen some footage of it, but it involves a actor, probably multiple actors, doing some parkour. Sometimes they're suspended with cables, and then there is an audio track playing that they're mimicking, and it tells a relatively short story of Spider-Man getting into trouble. What makes this so unforgettable is that at one point, Spider-Man is jumping over a building and then just lands on the other side and makes his classic Spider-Man moves, and there is no wire. And it's totally believable. And when I first saw it, I was like, how much do they pay this stuntman to do this? And I'm thinking, I see another video from taken on another time, other day, and it's exactly the same stunt. I'm thinking, I cannot imagine someone doing this all day long. It would be way too dangerous, too strenuous. And it turns out it is not a person. It is a droid. It's a robot. Not a droid, that's Star Wars. It's a robot. It's a mechanical robot. And the moves that it makes, so actually the robot itself is life-size. It is launched from a catapult, but then the moves it makes are pre-programmed, and it's because it's a robot, it looks so lifelike. And of course the robot itself is fed through internal batteries, but it's the first time that we see a robotic stuntman, and it's utterly convincing. And they use an old trick in the books that you see a lot, where In a lot of movies, they can't have the actor do all the stunts themselves. There are only a few people who like to do that, like Tom Cruise. Well, good for him if he likes to break his bones, which happens from time to time. But most actors are a bit wiser and will have stunt people literally stand in for them to do the stunts. But, of course, in the end, you need to know that's your character. And so before they could do face replacement and all that fancy stuff that you can now do with CGI, they would, for instance, show a stuntman falling down a building, disappear from view, and then the actor would just pop into the view of the camera as if he just fell on the ground and rolled over to the camera and then stood up. In your mind, you totally believe it. You totally think that, the guy I saw falling off that building is the same guy that now stands up and, you know, grabs for his head. It's like, oh, wow, that hurt. And they use exactly the same trick here in the live stunt, where you see the robot Spider-Man land. And of course, the building on which he's supposed to land is not a real building. It's just a facade. And behind it is a net to catch the robot. And then the actor is standing outside of that fake building and then appears. And like, because of the sound, you even hear, I think, Spider-Man when he's launched into the air. Your mind makes the connection and you believe it, unless you know, of course, that it's still the same guy. And it's not. And it's probably not even the same stuntman who is there at the other side of the stunt decor or set. It's probably just another stuntman. But because it's Spider-Man, you can't tell it anyway. He's wearing a mask. He's wearing a full body suit. So it's a brilliant concept and it works really well. Another thing that they added is a very creative food, how would you say that, food court. You can buy all sorts of Marvel themed food, and at first I was like, how are they going to do that? You know, are you going to be able to eat a spider burger? Is it going to be lame like that? But they played around, especially with Ant-Man, so that you can buy like a burger. And then the buns are super tiny, whereas the burger itself is huge and massive. And so they play around with the sizes of things. That is fun. They also have concoctions, I think. There are like even with LEDs in it and all sorts of little creative ideas to make you spend your money on food, which also is its weakness because, as we know, if there's one thing that will bankrupt you even more than the ticket price, It's eating in those parks. It's so expensive. So, but anyway, there's probably a market for it. They even sell, I think, a sandwich that costs $99. It's just insane. And people buy it. And I've seen some pictures of that sandwich and you're like, really? That's probably $10 worth of ingredients at the max. And people pay $100 for that? Yeah. Something tells me that may create some backlash over time. And then I think the rest, I didn't hear much. There is another show which involves, what's his name? The magician. Oh, come on. I can't think anymore. Not Captain. Oh, gosh. Doctor Strange. And that is a simpler and cheaper done than the Spider-Man gig. But it involves very clever projections using a big LED screen, probably. So you like a door opens and then you see him gesturing. You see a real live actor from behind and he's making the moves. But then on the LED screen, you see the magical stuff happening. And it's pretty convincing. It's a very clever smoke and mirrors type of show. And it works. It's almost a bit like an old fashioned magic show, but it's in, you know, Doctor Strange themed. That is probably already preparing the Doctor Strange movie that is just around the corner. So undoubtedly that will also be popular. And then, of course, you've got some more people dressed up in as their favorite superheroes, which is kind of similar to Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse, etc., walking around in the Disneyland part of the, or the proper Disney part of the park. And then maybe there is a roller coaster, but that's about it. It feels a bit thin on contents, but that's also what I thought of Star Wars. I mean, it looks amazing, the Star Wars part of Disneyland. And I think they've been adding to the things that you can do inside the Star Wars part of the park. But when it first opened, there was almost nothing. I think there was only one show, one attraction. And same thing with Harry Potter and Universal Studios. When I visited it, it was only half the size of what it is now. And I can't wait to go back there and visit it again, because nowadays it's so much more immersive and there's so much more to do. Of course, also way more people than when I visited. So I'm not sure if that detracts from the overall experience. It's like Star Wars. You see people filming themselves and it's like, wow, probably if you were really on that planet, you would not dress like that with flip-flops and shorts. But, oh well, we'll take it. Yeah, I think that's it. Was there anything else to discuss? No, I think I can move over to the next segment. Now, it's been so long since I have gone without posting a new episode of Father Roderick to the Max that I don't know if I've already mentioned this, but there is a new ministry, the Ministry of Catechist, that has been institutionalized, you could say, by Pope Francis. Now, of course, catechists have been around for as long as the church has been around, people that teach others the faith, be it children or adults. So those catechists have also always existed in the life of the church. But what Pope Francis has done is he's given it a new ranking, you could say, puts it on the same level in the organization of the church as the ministry of lector, so someone who reads the, or is it reader? I'm not sure. We call it lector in Dutch. So the person who reads scripture during Mass, except for the gospel, because that's supposed to be read by the deacon or by the priest or by the bishop, and the ministry of acolyte, which is also a formal ministry of people serving Mass. It's not like the altar boys and girls, but it's kind of a more, you could say, more professional version of that. Acolytes, helpers. And so by instituting this ministry of the catechist on the same level, and it will also have a liturgical institution right, which I think is still being developed. I haven't seen it yet. I think Pope Francis opens the way to even more involvement of the faithful in the liturgy and the ministry of the church. So previously, the ministry of lector and acolyte were mostly given to men, and they were part of the road towards the priesthood. So if you become a priest, before that, there's the ordination, the deaconal ordination, so you become a deacon, a transient deacon, as they call it, so it's a transitory deacon. And before that, you receive two ministries at various points in your during your priestly formation. The first one is you can read the readings, and it's an official ministry, so it means it's a task that has been given to you by the church, by the bishop, in my case. And so it also requires you to take that seriously. It's not just a voluntary position that you can just do whatever you please. No, it's literally a ministry that the church confides to you. And the same is true for acolyte. That was also mostly reserved for men, but Pope Francis has opened all these ministries open to men and women, including now also catechist. And the fact that there's also a liturgical institution right, makes it visible also that the church really cares about that ministry and wants to show its importance. It's the ministry of the church is multifold. Is that a word? There are many ways in which you can serve the church, but these are particularly important. Oops, I had to. I got to. Now, Scotland has these midgets, but here in Wageningen, they have, I think they're in cousins or something like that. Tiny little flies, and they just relish in me being here, and that they want to land on my nose, literally, or on my hand, and they itch. They don't bite like the midges, but they do itch. And they're so tiny that when you try to squash them, the displacement of the air gets them to safety. So frustrating. Anyway, maybe it's Ant-Man. But it's interesting to see that in a very short time, Pope Francis has made some significant steps into making the ministry that is all that already existed. Let's be honest; both men and women were already helping the overall service of the church by reading during liturgy services, by teaching people the faith, by serving Mass. But by creating this new ministry, the Pope says this is vital and this is open to everyone who is a Catholic. And I think that's good. We should have more of that. I think it is. We're still learning how to better involve the lay faithful in every aspect of the church. And I think the next dimension that is in need of reform and is already being reformed right now as we speak is of course leadership in the church. There is, if you look at the way decisions are made in parishes on a local level or on a diocesan level or even in the Vatican, just factually, most of those decisions are made by men. And women often only have an advisory function. They oftentimes cannot even vote. This has already changed quite a bit, and those reforms have started under John Paul II. So it's kind of futile to say, well, that's just all this new stuff from Pope Francis. Let's hope that that the next pope won't continue this. But this has been going on since the Vatican II and even before that. But it's going very slowly. And I think that, for instance, the crisis in the German church, I don't know if you've heard that, but one of the leading cardinals, Cardinal Marx, has offered his resignation to the Pope, because he feels that he should take responsibility for everything that went wrong in the church. And of course, it kind of focuses on the abuse scandals. But it I think, shows a much deeper need for reforms in the German church. And I would say almost everywhere in the Western world in the church, that there is something systemic that has gone wrong and that needs to be corrected. And you can only correct systemic mistakes or errors by changing the system in a certain way. And one of the things that Pope Francis keeps emphasizing is the importance of synodality, which is still to be fully defined, I would say, but it's the conviction that the Holy Spirit speaks through every member of the church, not exclusively through men or ordained men. And church history actually has some very, very convincing examples of this. There are doctors of the church that have corrected popes, and they were women. Some of which weren't even, weren't even religious. Women at vital moments in the history of the church have been used by the Holy Spirit to bring the church back on course, back on track. I think that is what Pope Francis wants to bake into the system a bit more, that we take that seriously, that the Holy Spirit works through each and every one of us. And the first thing you have to do when the Holy Spirit is involved is listening. And in order to listen, you need to have a platform to speak from. You need also sometimes an institutional structure that allows people to speak their mind, to give their opinion, their vision, and to be heard. It also means there have to be structures in place where that opinion can be validated by other members of the church, not just the ordained men, but this synodal discernment is something that concerns the entire church. That actually is something you see time and again in church history. The great councils were a communal process. And like Vatican II is not thought cooked up by a couple of theologians. It is a resume, you could say, a summary, a condensed version of a process that was going through the entire church for many years. And that led to, ultimately, the documents of Vatican II. And I think that Pope Francis realizes that this is something that we should not reserve this only for big councils that you do every century or so. This is something that should be much more ingrained in our day-to-day life, our day-to-day decisions, and functioning of the church. And I think this is another step in that direction, and we'll see where it goes from here.
The humanoid must not escape.
Time to talk video games. Haven't had much time to play video games. I'm so looking forward to once my new home is there and I've got fiber internet. Oh my gosh, I'm going to catch up on all those hours that I wanted to game, but I couldn't because I was too tired or the internet didn't work really well. So I've done a little bit of Valheim, not as much as I would like to. Still one of my favorite games. And I am really eager for the day that I can unpack my Oculus Quest again. Because there's so much going on in the virtual reality world. Can't wait to see what Apple is going to come up with when they are going to introduce us to their AR glasses. More about that later on in this show. Well, later on, I'm already talking for more than an hour now, so I need to start wrapping things up. But let me briefly mention a few things. I heard that there's going to be another version of the PlayStation VR goggles, which are currently, I think, scheduled for 2022. That's also, judging from the orders that are already being made for lenses, headset lenses, 2022 will also bring us another a third incarnation of the Oculus Quest. So I'm just going to skip this Oculus Quest 2 generation and wait for the Oculus Quest 3. One of the things that they can already tell from the lenses that are being ordered is that the field of view will enhance. And that's always been my beef with current VR technology. It still looks as if you're wearing, you know, these underwater goggles. It's not totally around you. And so the peripheral vision is so important for immersion. So hopefully that'll be something for the Oculus Quest 3. Then, I don't know about you, but I am still eagerly looking forward to the LEGO Star Wars Skywalker saga that was promised to us like 5 years ago. Still not out. I think it's been delayed also because of COVID. So, right now, the new release date is to be determined. But man, I so want this to be a success. I love the LEGO games. And I can't wait to see all the new game mechanics that they've teased for this ultimate LEGO Star Wars game. Then E3 is currently not underway. There have been some pre-shows, but I think in the next couple of days we're going to see a lot about new video games. This may also finally be the year that we get to see a few more PlayStation 5 specific games, newer games that really showcase the new capabilities of the recent generation of gaming consoles. And that's another thing I really want to do. I've got Xbox Ultimate and I haven't been able to use my Xbox for 3 or 4 months now. Man, so much to catch up on. All right, let's talk a little bit about tech. So Apple had its WWDC conference and keynote. I don't know about you, but I felt it was more of the same. It's a new iPad OS, a new iOS. Nothing really groundbreaking. There were some cool demos. I liked the ability to create three-dimensional objects by just moving your camera around it. Apparently, it's working really well, but all that is still preparing, I think, what's to come. The same is true for spatial audio. This kind of passed under the radar, but from what I've heard, this is a big deal. Apple has now made its music service compatible with Dolby Atmos, which is positional sound, which means every instrument, recorded instrument, every track has a position in space. So it means if you turn your head while wearing Apple's gear, the direction of the sound will not change. So normally, of course, if you're wearing a headset and you're moving your head to the right, the stereo image will just move along with you. with positional audio, that's not going to happen. It is as if you're really sitting in front of a live orchestra or band, and then you're turning your head. Then, of course, the things that are next to your left ear sound more clear than the audio that's coming from the reflections into your right ear, that sort of stuff. Now, this positional audio, this ability to create virtual objects very easily, is, according to Robert Scoble, who is a longtime technology insider, you could say, or some people call him prophet. I mean, he often predicts trends that then become a reality. He wrote a very interesting article about the future, the near future of Apple, and how Apple is going to blow us all away because of 3D. And this is not the kind of, 3D, watch 3D movies on your TV, not that sort of stuff. That didn't have a future. But 3D everything, 3D in combination with AR, 3D with audio, 3D with, positioning. Know your iPhone, your device, knowing where you are, what you're looking at, machine learning, all that stuff. I can't go into detail because it's such a broad article, and it's clear that he has some inside knowledge, but he can't really say much. It's probably under NDA. But what he's telling everyone is, you ain't seen nothing yet. This next half year for Apple is going to be a game changer on the level of the introduction of the iPhone. He doesn't say that lightly. And I think, in addition to everything we've heard already about AR and how much Apple is investing and also buying up companies here, right and left, to help them develop stuff, this AR 3D integration, the software that they've been giving developers for years now, none of that has resulted in anything too spectacular. Most people will still think of AR as, yeah, they mentioned that, but I don't know what the deal is for Apple. Well, all that will probably make sense once everything comes together in that one new device that is going to be both building upon stuff that is already being developed, like, well, what Facebook is doing with the Oculus, but it's going to be like 10 steps beyond anything that people are doing right now. Knowing Apple, it will also have a price tag that will reflect that exclusivity. It's good to see that Apple is, well, it's good to hear that Apple is probably innovating behind the scenes much, much more than you would think from just looking at the WWDC keynote. I was mostly disappointed by the fact that we didn't get another, a new iMac Pro, or what is it? Apple, man. Get your act together, Apple. I want a MacBook Pro with more ports and an SD card reader. I want it now. I need it for my work. Why can't we have it? Oh, well. With all the costs of the renovation, it will be years before I can buy anything for Apple. All right. And then we've got some teases from Microsoft that they are going to shake up the world by the biggest renewal of their Windows product in the recent years. This is not going to be a gradual update. Everything points to the launch of Windows 11. I'm not sure if they will call it like that, but it is a huge overhaul of their operating system. And I've been pretty content with the way Microsoft has been building Windows into what it is today. I cannot imagine working without Windows right now. I'm always working on a PC. Every once in a while, I work on Apple. And as long as I work on, apps like, the Adobe Suite, etc., I couldn't care less what the underlying system is. But I am very used to the versatility of Windows 10. I just like the looks of it. I like what it does and how it kind of never really poses any problems anymore. So I can't wait to see where they're going to go next. All right, I need to start wrapping this up. Thank you so much for being a patron, for your support, for your patience. This show was extra long, but then again, you've been without a show for a couple of weeks. Let's not do that again anymore. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. God bless.